Cook, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Mamma mia! Lionel! Ronaldo Kielco now. Here's a Honduran, and he'll whip it in back to the far post. Elis! Albert Elis, La Panterita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome, ATX, and welcome to Soccer Matters on the Horn tonight, a jam-packed show, as always, presented by Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. If you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, Daspit Law Austin will have you covered. Call 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. Get that representation you need with DaspitLawAustin.com. Personal injury attorneys, a big thank you to John Daspit and DaspitLawAustin.com. Streaming, HornFM.com. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, or Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters, or head over to GlennDavisSoccer.com. That's the shameless promotion. Austin FC checking all the boxes and getting ready for 2021. We have a nice chunk of MLS talk tonight also. Some notes on Cecilio Dominguez, who's being linked with Austin FC. But first, let's hear from Matthew McConaughey.
It's 1996, the beginning. It's just a dream. For the new North American soccer, it's skill, it's style, it's community, it's teams, it's more teams. Oh, yes, it is. It's fans, family, future, it's a generation, it's a movement. It's 25 years deep, and it's just getting started.
Now, if that doesn't get you pumped, maybe this will. After the wonderful signing by Austin FC of Rodney Redis, the young Paraguayan, 20 years old, winger type, guess what? Now linked, Cecilio Dominguez, a Paraguayan international, 17 caps, very versatile. I've watched a lot of tape. I have seen him play with Club America when he was at that club and scored a boatload of goals there, 21 goals there. 17 caps for Paraguay. He's played in the Copa America. I guess people say he's a winger, but, you know, he can all of a sudden look very much like a number 10. He can all of a sudden look very much like a striker getting into the box. He can very much look like a guy who runs a channel. So the versatility and the differing things that he can do makes this incredibly exciting. Now, I know they share the same agent, both Redis and Dominguez. So, there is something that just makes you feel really excited and intrigued about these two signings. These are big signings. These are players with immense talent at young ages that are looking to make the next phase of their careers, and that might be more so in the vein of Rodney Redis. But wow, you know, you can find footage of Dominguez doing a number of different things, and he's obviously a dribbler, which, you know, from an entertainment value, we absolutely love dribblers. So we'll see how this saga works out. Apparently at Independiente, where he is in Argentina, he's got some unpaid salary. That's always a problem. That is something that MLS can take an advantage of, because there's nobody in MLS worrying about where their paycheck's coming from. My days in the 80s, if it was on your chair in the locker room, you grabbed it and you raced to the bank because you wanted to get there before others to hope that it cleared. So a little bit different, but really interesting stuff on Cecilio Dominguez. That said, MLS players, coaches, production crews, support staff behind the scenes for ESPN, man, did they deserve plaudits and applause? After the early staggering of COVID brought to Orlando by FC Dallas and Nashville, they got it back on course. Tournament ended last night. Portland Timbers winning 2-1 in the final. I think these were two teams that are just kind of ready to get home. But they both showed us a lot and a lot of interesting things. Jeremy Obobese and Eric Williamson now becoming starters for Portland. Credit to the Timbers and their coach, Gio Savarese. They know who they are. They have depth. They have those that can make the difference, and those players do. You know, the likes of Sebastian Blanco and Diego Valeri. Valeri's delivery, unbelievable, to Mabiala in the 27th minute for the opener. Another guy who's a DP, Mauricio Pereira, equalizing for Orlando City. And then Dario Zuparic getting the game winner, a Croatian, for the Portland Timbers. Fact is, money is spent and invested in MLS, just like Austin FC is doing, on attacking players, because they're the ones that can win you games. They can win you games you might not deserve to win. So now it's on to phase one. And if Austin FC were playing, they'd be going up against FC Dallas, the Houston Dynamo, Colorado, Minnesota, as we mentioned. So tonight, FC Dallas will kick off phase one against Nashville SC. All right, so let's listen now to the commissioner, Don Garber, on phase one.
As you know, the initial phase of the schedule is going to begin when FC Dallas and Nashville SC will begin to make up some of the lost games by their not being able to compete down in Orlando. And that first game will be on August 12th in Toyota Stadium in Frisco. And the rest of the league will continue the 2020 regular season 8 days later. And due to travel restrictions, I'm sure we'll talk about this with some questions between the U.S. and Canada, we're announcing details just for our U.S.-based clubs and our phase one of our schedule today. Phase one will take us through September 20th, and then we're going to continue to work with the three Canadian clubs regarding their schedules. And we continue to work, literally as we speak, closely with the health authorities and government officials in Canada to finalize our plan for playing games north of the border.
So that was Don Garber on phase one, and it begins tonight with FC Dallas and Nashville, and then a lot of the other teams will get in action next week. By the way, all this information on Cecilio Dominguez, a lot of this coming from Roberto Rojas of BN Sport. There's been some great work done by Chris Bills of the Austin Statesman as well, finding background information on this. But it's certainly exciting, and this is what you want. You want to be in the news, and Austin FC is making great moves. All right. Now, tomorrow, Red Bull Leipzig taking on Atletico Madrid. Now, this is Julian Nagelsmann against Diego Simeone. It's definitely a clash of playing styles. And I absolutely love the fact that we got single games every day. There's not two going on at the same time. You can really focus on them. And we've got the beauty of that from today through Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Now, the clash of styles. The pressing high-energy tempo of RB Leipzig against the difficult-to-break-down Atleti and Simeone. The big loss here, though, and I can't stand this when players transfer in the middle of a Champions League, is Timo Werner having left Red Bull Leipzig to go to Chelsea. Now, remember, Leipzig ripped apart Spurs. They're going to get their chances in this game, but can they take it? Will they take it? Will Patrick Schick deliver in the absence of Werner? And this will be huge because Atleti doesn't concede a lot of chances. They'll defend in the low block. They'll frustrate. They'll close down space. They'll deny the turn. And they'll hope to get a moment from Diego Costa, Saul, Felix, or something off a set piece. Jan Oblak in goal, too. I mean, even when they get breached, they've got an outstanding goalkeeper. So if you're a Red Bull Leipzig, there is one thing that's pretty clear here. You got to get the game's first goal to alter the tactics, to pull Atleti out, to make them uncomfortable, and, you know, push them into playing a game that is not their type of game. So that's a great one to keep an eye on. Another thing to keep an eye on is Andrea Pirlo. Were you as shocked as I when he became the manager of Juventus? I don't know. Might be a stopgap measure. I didn't even know he was coaching the under-23s. I mean, I just saw lots of great pictures of him dressed up like a model, sipping some good red wine. Maurizio Sarri out. Agnelli apparently handpicking Andrea Pirlo. Apparently Cristiano Ronaldo wanted him at Juventus as well. So now everybody's going to make those comparisons with Zidane. But anyway, financially, might not be a hit with Pirlo as well. But I would root for him. He was such an amazing soccer player. So Andrea Pirlo now is the new manager of Juventus. Okay, a big thank you again to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. That is where you get in contact with them. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. Let's take a break. When we come back from America Soccer Now, Brian Sciarretta, tracking a lot of the young American players overseas in Europe. He joins us next. Welcome back to Soccer Matters here in Austin, Texas. As we roll on here, DaspitLawAustin.com, our presenting sponsors, a big, big thank you to them. Also want to give you a little shout-out to our new sponsor, Lustau Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life. Lustau Vermouth is fun. You do it over ice. You do it over ice with tonic water, club soda, or maybe you pair it with your favorite gin in a gin and tonic with an orange peel. You break the orange peel. You get the essence and the oil in there, and then a few drops of lime juice, and man, Lustau Vermouth is refreshing. Comes in Rojo, comes in Rosé, comes in white. Perfect in gin and tonics, on ice, and like I said, with tonic water or club soda. All right, Brian Sciarretta has carved out a great niche for himself. He's with American Soccer Now, and he has followed a lot of the young talent that goes over to Europe and then tracks their careers as they go on. Brian Sciarretta joins us now, and we appreciate him coming on to talk a number of young talents in Europe.
Brian, thank you very much for coming on the show. Did I make you thirsty there?
Yes, you did. And first of all, thanks very much, Glenn. I appreciate being on the show, as always. It's been quite a labor of love here to have the opportunity to cover the sport in this manner for this many years.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on. For my listeners, just your background a little bit and how you decided to specialize on the American player overseas.
Well, you know, it started off with that. I hit Yanks abroad, and that was the first place that would let me write for them. And that was around 2006, 2007. And I was just trying to make a niche for myself. And I figured, well, you know, there's always so many great reporters covering the game everywhere. I might as well cover what the young kids are doing. They're easy access. It's interesting to get the ops, you know, to cover their development. And the U20 World Cup was coming up then in Canada, which would give me a chance to go cover it. So I went down that road, but I didn't want to just be a youth soccer reporter. I wanted to cover them throughout their entire careers, both domestically and abroad. And you know, flash forward 13, 14 years later, here I am. And I've got to see the generations come through at all phases, both beginning careers, mid careers, and end of careers. And it's been very fascinating to see. You know, you learn, you know, who's good, who's not, and what are signs to watch for when a kid's about ready to break through, and where people are going to go for during their prime years, and so who goes into coaching at the end. You know, it's just very interesting.
He's at Brian Sciarretta on Twitter, and you spell his last name Sciarretta. He's Brian Sciarretta of American Soccer Now. All right, I'm going to go right into a signing. Houston Dynamo signed Ian Hoffman as a member of the under-20 national team, played in the youth setup at Karlsruhe in Germany. He's also very familiar, obviously, to Tab Ramos, the coach of Houston, and also Omid Namazi. Tell us about him and maybe what we would expect from him in Major League Soccer.
No, I think he's a very good player, and you know, for an organization like Houston that wants to, you know, have a youthful approach similar to what they're doing up in Dallas, I think it's important to get that start. And maybe their academy doesn't have a player the level of Ian yet, but in terms of giving some kind of encouragement that they have, that they're willing to play some young American players and have some success with young American players. They're bringing in a player that they really believe in. And, you know, Tab and especially Omid, who coached him at the U18 level, are very familiar with this kid. And, you know, I think it's a good first signing. It makes a lot of sense. And for Ian, he gets to go, you know, play for a team or with coaches that have set jobs. They're not going to get fired anytime soon. And you get to go play for a team that believes in you. And whether you go to Sweden or it's not so much the league that he's going to, MLS or anything, it's finding a place where, like, you're 18 years old, where the coaches value you and respect you. That's more valuable than gold, and you overlook whatever league you want to go to just to have that kind of environment. And I think he's getting that. And I think the test will be for him. You know, I don't like to compare young players who are just starting with very, very good players and established players. But, you know, think of like a guy like John Harkes or Fabian Johnson, who could play all over the field very effectively. You know, Ian has that in him. He plays right back, all the way across the midfield, center midfield, outside midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think the challenge for Tab and Omid and Ian will be, to keep the versatility, but really also centering on a main position where he can go and be an impact player, not just be used to plug holes here and there, but find his best position and let him, you know, be an impact player for the Dynamo. And then I think after a couple of years, it's going to be good. If he does really well, they'll probably sell him back to Europe. But in the meantime, it'll also show these Houston Academy kids that this isn't just a team that plays, you know, older foreign players. If you're a young American player, you will get minutes. So this is a very good signing for all the parties involved.
All right. So you made a great, great point there about the fact that it's good to be wanted, number one.
Yeah.
And then number two, there are times you don't want to be a Swiss Army knife and use to plug holes because mm-hmm. you become the master. You know, you learn a lot of things, but you don't really sometimes, and we've seen this happen with players, really understand positionally something mm-hmm. in and out as opposed to being moved around a lot. You mentioned his superpower, and that may be versatility. What else jumps up out to you about him? Because I've watched a lot of tape on him. He's certainly very busy and, to your point, very versatile. What else would you say that we would focus on?
I think he's technically very strong. Like, you know, he's got a good touch. And, you know, he strikes me as, a guy who's going to bring some leadership. You know, I like his background as a kid. His family, I did a piece on him where I spoke with his family and they're great, you know, so he comes from like a really good background and very mature kid. Remember, this is a kid who was called up by Germany's youth national teams too. You know, cause they were over there and they were impressed by him. So, you know, his grandmother, I believe, was the one that was from, Germany. So he brings off some, you know, he brings some impressive traits when he was over there. I think, you know, his intelligence to be able to know all those positions at such a young age is really, he's not just an explosive attacker or just an explosive, you know, fullback. He's just a good, well-rounded soccer player. So he knows the sport. Like I said, now it's just going to be, the coaching that's going to find his, you know, bring out the best ways for him to impact games and control games and also maintain, use that maturity to blossom into a young leader, perhaps maybe with them. He's going to be getting some U-20 call-ups, I imagine, should this cycle continue, as we all hope it will. He did very well in the U-20 camp back in January. So, he's impressed everywhere he's gone, and he was a real – I don't think he lost a game with the U.S. U-18s when he's playing with Omid. So there's – it's just the well-rounded nature and his ability to read games, I think, is really what is jumps out most.
Brian, obviously, you know the player very well. Tab Ramos does. Omid Namazi does. If you look at this player, how long does it take to accelerate his development where he's getting minutes in Major League Soccer? Is that something that could happen this year? Is it next year?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a tough year to develop as a young player. I mean, we don't know, the rate at which we got the first six games, I think, released after the shutdown. And, you know, if the stage after this has like a lot of games and over a short period of time, they might have to employ a lot of squad rotation. And then that's always going to work in the favor, as we're seeing in Europe right now, and five subs and all these other rules are geared towards getting more players on the field. It's going to be tough for him also because he has to get a quarantine going down to Texas. And I'm
all right. So let's do this.
I think he's going to be
about COVID. If there was no COVID or anything going on, all the challenges that we know are here with a manager and a staff that knows him very well, what would you think the timeline for him would be to be actually getting minutes in MLS?
I think this player
inside and out.
Yeah, I think he's going to get player minutes towards the end of the season. I would think on a normal year, he'd be playing regularly next year as a 19-year-old after the U-20 World Cup. I think they'd let him focus on the U-20 World Cup through May, you know, sparingly, maybe some minutes beforehand. I think, you know, we started seeing that with a lot of players in MLS, like after the last U-20 World Cup, like Abubakar Keita for Peru. Like he started – they didn't really use him much, but then after the U-20 World Cup is when he started to take off. And I think that's when they would use him for that, because I think he's going to be a starter for that team.
Yeah. And we don't want to put the horse before the cart here, but he's obviously a very talented young man, Ian Hoffman. We're talking to Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now. All right, let's move on to Anthony Robinson. Had a great season for Wigan. He's a left back. He's now purportedly going to Sheffield United, who had the amazing season. This is a great move for him.
I think so. Look, I think he's, even if it's not Sheffield United, it'll be a club of that caliber. Look, you know, Enda Stevens is a very good left back for Sheffield United. I mean, the guy's played 19,000 league minutes for Sheffield and Portsmouth before that, over the last five seasons. So he's a workhorse. He's 30 years old. But, like, look, if you're going to go to a top club in the Premier League, you know, top 10 team in the Premier League, you're going to have to compete with minutes against somebody good. So, you know, and I like – so now it's just a full-team Irish international. But, look, I think he's putting himself in a position where it's not like AC Milan. It is winnable competition. And I think the club is – when I did an interview with him 2 weeks ago, he was clear. He wanted to – he was not going to go to a club just because it had a big name. He was going to go to a club that where he could win and he could play. Those were his two things he was looking at. And – you know, I think at Sheffield United, he's found a nice combo there if that is the club indeed he goes to. If it's not, he'll find something along those lines. But finding a left back of that speed is great. And what I was impressed with last year was he wasn't just a fullback anymore who just bombed forward, and that was what he did. His defensive game sharpened up big time last year, where he was, you know, he was really able to contain opposing wingers and stuff. And I think that's he's grown in his game so much to the point where he's overcome his health scares and whole health issues, where I think he's in line for a real breakout right now. And this is good to see.
Exciting stuff there. Let's move on now to another player. Cameron Carter-Vickers obviously has done a lot with Luton Town. He's gotten a lot of minutes. Where do you see his career at this point? Because there was a lot of promise and still is promise with him.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Luton Town end of the season run was particularly going back since January, was the career high point of Carter-Vickers. I mean, they were so deep. They were all nearing double digits deep in the relegation fight. And the amount of points per game they were getting just because of Vickers and the less goals they were conceding, the fact that they survived relegation is remarkable. And they did it in a thrilling way, and Vickers was a big part of it. I think... £2.5 million would probably be the price Tottenham is asking for a release. That probably prices Luton Town out. But, I mean, I would love to see Carter-Vickers. I mean, he's just been on either mid-table teams or relegation battles, you know, his entire career. And he's played now five, six different championship teams. I'd like to see him go to someplace where he can show he can win, you know, not just be like a really great, you know, clog in the back, but also, you know, contribute in all aspects of the game, like the true modern center back with passing out of the back and everything. You know, it's going to come down to who can afford him right now. Tottenham wants to get something out of him. $2.5 million is not unreasonable, but it probably prices him out of the defensive teams that really could use him in that bunker kind of style that he thrived in at Luton Town. So we'll see. He's a good player. He remains a good player, but you know, I think he needs to probably show he can do something on a winning side as opposed to just like a team that's always overwhelmed by lack of talent.
Talking to Brian Chiaretta, let's go on to Matt Miazga. I think some people might have been, you know, their heads turned when he signed with Chelsea. He's been on a litany of loans, Vitesse in the Netherlands, Nantes in France, and Reading in England. I guess he's now Chelsea property again. Is he somebody you see actually competing to try and improve them defensively, or what do you think the future of Matt Miazga is, who's played for the U.S. national team?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're looking at another loan. But he was, you know, he lost his cool a couple of points there. I think, you know, towards Reading, he had that red card in the three-game suspension, sorry. Yeah. And I think he was fined for another incident in the Netherlands. But, you know, he's a good player, but I think he should have options. I don't think he's going to go stay at Chelsea very much, but I think, you know, the positives outweigh the negatives for his time at Reading, and I certainly think, you know, he could be, you know, pushing for another team that is looking for a promotion out of the championship. I think that's his level, but you know, he's a good and consistent player, but I think you're going to want to see him, another player, try to push towards earning 3,000 minutes a season, which would make him like an every game starter. He hasn't really quite done that. He's had a couple injuries here and there, but you know, you want to start taking on the leadership now and showing maturity because he's no longer a youth player. He's really entering his prime here. So you're wanting to see one of those players, you know, make that transition from, oh, he's a good young player, a good prospect, into there's your mature leader. There's your guy. I think he has that talent. So that's what you really want to see from him in the next state step he makes in his career.
Brian, as always, tremendous insight. We appreciate it. We look forward to your next visit on the show. Thank you for getting us updated on all these players, and including Ian Hoffman, who's now coming to Major League Soccer in Houston. Thank you so much for coming on the show, as always.
It's always a pleasure, Glenn, anytime you need.
Always great catching up with Brian Chiaretta and getting all the information and insight into a lot of the young talent there. And it was great to hear about Miazga and Anthony Robinson and Ian Hoffman, who now comes to Major League Soccer in under 20. All right, show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, personal injury attorneys. John and his firm, they'll have you covered. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident. Nobody wants to, but you do need representation. John and his firm will do that. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. And again, don't forget, tomorrow, Atletico Madrid taking on Red Bull Leipzig. Okay, when we come back, we're going to catch up with a Major League Soccer defender who has played for both the Portland Timbers, currently in Houston, to talk about the Major League Soccer bubble, what it was like down in Orlando, and what Phase 1 may look like. Zarek Valentin joins us next. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Lustav Vermouth, La Liga update. It's all about Sevilla advancing to the semifinals of the Europa League, where they will take on Manchester United. They get past Wolves. Raul Jimenez of Wolves missing a penalty kick 2 days ago. All right, get a little Spain in your life. Lustav Vermouth, fun over ice with tonic water or club soda, or my favorite, paired with your favorite gin, or my favorite gin, in a gin and tonic. You break the orange peel, few drops of lime juice, Lustav Vermouth in a gin and tonic, so refreshing. Get it in Rojo, Rosé, or White, and ask for it at your local liquor store. That's Lustav Vermouth, L-U-S-T-A-U. Time now, Zarek Valentin, Houston Dynamo defender on MLS in the bubble.
Zarek, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's just get right into just now that you got back, you processed the bubble. You know, explain a little bit to the people out there listening when they hear the word bubble. What did that all really mean down in Orlando?
Okay, so basically the bubble was two hotels that made up 24, I guess, if we're not going to count Dallas and Nashville, 24 MLS teams. And the bubble was essentially these two hotels on the same lot. We had access to two pools, and there was a soccer pool. There was just some little mini, actually three pools, sorry about that. There was some mini games that we could play. And ultimately, the teams were separated into two hotels, meal rooms, all separate. But the bubble meaning we could not leave our little compound. There was roads separating it, so we could, you saw a lot of coaches doing runnings on some of the paths, but the paths never left our two hotels. So that was ultimately the bubble. And then we take buses directly from there to the training facility, and we'd have to walk with masks. We were, all the fields were separated by barriers, and then we'd get straight back on the buses and drive back. So that was our two quote unquote bubbles that we had to take part in Orlando.
How structured, I imagine your days were pretty structured, but how structured were your days? And how did Todd Ramos and his staff maybe say, hey, I need to lay off the guys, and how much time might you get in a position like that? Because I know the games are coming thick and heavy.
Of course. I think that the staff handled everything very well. There was about 4 hours in the afternoon between once we'd get back at 1 o'clock from training. We'd finish training around finish lunch around 1:30. And then from about 2 till 7, we would have treatments. And then that would be kind of our downtime. Every once in a while, we would have testing thrown in there. We did testing every other day. We had to do testing before games to assure that we were fine. And once Dallas and Nashville got out of there, in which they brought COVID into the bubble from their markets previously, it couldn't have gone much smoother. Yes, it's a little bit annoying that we had to get up at 7 o'clock to go do testing, but ultimately we were done the rest of the day, and we didn't, you know, guys could go back and take a nap after training, which is a little soccer siesta, as we call it. And ultimately the staff and Caesar and Matt and the club, we're really organized down there, and we're were made easy for us to just focus on playing.
Talking to Zarek Valentin of the Houston Dynamo, the right back acquired from the Portland Timbers. Now, you know, if I look at what's going on, one of my first gut feelings is teams and individuals that deal with these sudden changes and all these inconveniences and differences in their training regimes maybe are going to be the ones that have the advantage. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. I think the quicker people can adapt to the changes and what's going on, probably the better those teams will be. And I was talking to one of my buddies on the Timbers, and to give a little bit of insight into that thought process and how they handled their situation, the past 2 years, they've had to open up with games on the road because of new construction. So two seasons ago in 2018, we started with 5 games on the road. In 2019, they started with 12 games on the road. So ultimately, that team is very used to being in a hotel, being pretty low-key, having to make do. So the whole quote-unquote bubble that we were in was something that was so normal for that team. So they might have had a little bit of an advantage in that sense because that was all they've been known, or that was all they've known for the past 2 years, because they were forced into that for the stadium construction. And yeah, definitely there's some aspects of it where you want to try to settle in as quick as possible. But ultimately, once the ball gets out there, then you got to make plays, and that kind of kicks in. And once you step in those lines, that's when you revert back to your normal tendencies. And that's what we love doing. And that's why we're willing to put up with some of these interesting, unprecedented times, because that's what we love. And we're willing to do whatever to get back to our normal.
Do you realize this one day will be looked at as a real defining crazy moment in the history of Major League Soccer 15, 20 years from now?
100%. I bet you Don, when he came into year 25, didn't think it would go this way. But ultimately, I think that there's going to be a lot of positives because the league has to adapt. The league is adapting. Players are adapting. And I think that you're going to see some positive things come from that. And personally, one of the most impressive and positive takeaways has been VAR. As much as I cannot stand it for that, in my opinion, a very bad PK call against LA Galaxy. I think if you call that, you can call one every single corner kick. But regardless, the communication between the guy in the booth and the referee on the field is fantastic to see, because you get to see the different angles. You get to see them talk through a situation. You get to see exactly their thought processes and what they see. And then there's no middle ground. So the fan that's watching from the stands, or not from the stands, from home, immediately gets to see it. And then you can go back and watch the broadcast and hear the referee speak through that entire process. And for me, that's been one of the most positive things to take away from MLS's
battle. No, I think it's powerful. I think it takes a lot of what if or nebulous areas out of the whole thing to just hear the two guys communicate.
Of course.
Do you have any indication that that's going to continue on?
I don't know yet. I do think that from all the positive press they're getting about it, I'd be really hard pressed to think they wouldn't do it, because usually people crush VAR because of the length of time and the unknown aspect of it, but this clears all that up. And as long as the referees are doing the job to the best of their abilities, and they make mistakes, but ultimately you can go back and see the thought process, and then they'll get better from that as well. And I think it also gives the viewers a totally different aspect, and to see and to hear what the thought process of the referee is, which a lot of times we don't even get on the field, because it's really difficult and a lot of those moments are quick. I am not a huge fan of the in-game coaching ones. I think that's a little bit interesting. That's maybe call me old school, but I think the VAR one is one that hopefully will stick.
Yeah, I love it too. I agree with 100% on all fronts with the VAR, and I think it leads to just making things clearer to everybody, and at least you all know what their thought process was at the end of the day with it. Zarek Valentin, Houston Dynamo defender, joining us. Okay, you get back to Houston. What were the first 2 days back like, and getting back to your family, you know, a newborn, all kinds of interesting things going on in your life?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was great to be back. My wife basically lateraled our 10-month-old like a rugby football and took a seat on the couch for about 2 days. So she said, listen, you got
going to come up in this interview.
100%. It was illegal. It was backwards. So we're good. So as a dad, you have to know, and I know all my teammates know, that once we got back in there, we were able to sleep through the night. We were able to take naps. We had all of that. So you might as well rest it up, because we had a few days off and I was on duty for essentially a few days straight through the, I mean, thankfully Cam was sleeping through the night, but naps, diapers, every dirty diaper coming to, towards dad.
Yeah.
Mom got to rest on the couch for a bit. And I think that there was definitely a few days though where it was nice to be back with family, but it felt bittersweet because of the way we exited the tournament. And I think that the team took a lot of positive steps in different games. I think that, you know, we can look back and be very critical as a defender to have two leads in two games and to not come away with 3 points. I can be very critical about that, and I always will, because I try to hold myself and the team to a standard. We should close those games out. Obviously, some things aren't completely in our control, but ultimately we took some positive steps. But it's to a 90th minute PK is never going to feel good. Even if it is warranted, it's never going to be a fun way to go out, and it's going to be tough. But ultimately, we know that there will be games, which is exciting. And when we get to those points, first one against Dallas, I mean, I hate Dallas. I will say that openly. I've said that since day one. It's the Philadelphia Eagle in me is where it comes from, but it helps me fit in here. But you know, that gives us some more motivation going into that first game.
All right. So let me talk about that last 45 minutes. So we're not going to dwell on it, but watching it at home, you guys took a lot of pressure from the Galaxy.
Mm.
At the end of the day, one of the things you would have said to yourself was, how could we have, at least for moments, changed the level of pressure, flipped it on them, held the ball maybe a little bit longer? Are these things you're talking about? And you know, how truthful is what I'm saying when it comes to that second 45 minutes?
You're spot on. I think that teams, and I've been on multiple different teams, and one of the first things that you'll say is, it felt as if we got into a shell too early. And I think of a boxer. Once you get into the corner, it felt like we put our hands up and we're just trying to ride out until the end of the game. And I think we made some good subs. I thought Ronaldo came on for Mauro and did very well. And I don't think he necessarily thought, you know, with Christian, it was difficult in his quarantine period and stuff like that. I thought Ronaldo came on and did very well. I think ultimately the thing that we could have done better is been a little bit braver on the ball. I think we tried a few times and it didn't necessarily work out because they were pressuring pretty high. And we just reverted to sitting back into a shell and hoping to maybe catch them on the break. And it's very difficult for any team to defend that deep against good teams and good players for 45 minutes. And you saw that against LAFC with us. And you see, I mean, at most teams against LAFC, but it's very difficult for us to do that. So I think we do need to be a bit braver in possession when it comes to those times. And I think a lot of that comes with trying to recruit. Obviously, if you're more fit, then you're fresher and then you're allowed to play. I think a lot of times when players get tired, their mind starts to slow down. A lot of times, building out of the back and playing, you have to think a few steps ahead. And if you can't get there in your brain, then your body won't necessarily know exactly what moves to make. So then as a defender, you might just resort to playing it in the channels. And Albert and Nico or whoever, whoever's up top can only run those balls down so much. And I think that you're spot on with a lot of what you're saying. That's definitely something that staff and us look about and something we speak about internally, because no one wants to defend for 45 minutes. That's not fun. That's not why we play the game. You want to play on the front foot. And, you know, we were trying to get a result, but I think if we managed the ball a little bit, we could have rested on the ball, which would have given us more energy to step to players a little bit quicker.
We're talking to Zarek Valentin, Dynamo defender. Great conversation here, and appreciate him coming on the show tonight. So if I asked you to describe to the fan base the playing style of the team, now it may still be evolving because it's a new coach, Tab's getting used to it, his staff is getting – how would you describe it to the fans?
How would I describe it? I think that one of the first things people see from us is we try to take advantage of moments when we can step and put the other team under pressure. It's difficult when you get tired to do that, because when you want to press a team and one player arrives late or reacts late, a team can play out of that. And for example, we had very good moments against, I would say, first half against LAFC. I thought we did it well. And then obviously as you get tired, players don't get as close to their marks, and then they're allowed to play out of pressure. And I think, for example, bad a bad example would be our away at Kansas City. A lot of times one or two or three guys might go and the fourth would be late and Kansas City would play through us and then they'd switch it and then we're running and tracking and then we're a little bit all over the place. I think we got better at that as a team, but ultimately it was difficult for a lot of teams in MLS's back to try to play on much of front foot because they were elevated preseason games almost because we had not played anybody. So there wasn't that normal sharpness that some of these games have because we had to go through that period where you're kind of learning on the fly and getting back into it. So obviously we want to be a team that tries to press high and at certain moments, but also we want to play free. We have a lot of guys who can do some very fun, incredible things. Albert showed his worth in the first game. Darwin shows how special he was. His free kick was really good. Obviously, we have Mauro, who has a history of scoring. So we want to be a team that also plays free at that point in time. And I think that's something we're still working on. We do have new pieces, and we haven't done it as well as I think we can at times. And I think everyone would say that ultimately, because if we look at the lineup, Marco's new to that picture. Victor was new. I was new. Darwin was new. Nico Hansen came in last year. So we had some new pieces that we're trying to still get some of those relationships, but we still want to be a team that plays free and creates chances and has fun doing so.
Yeah, not to mention that last year the team really was a counterattacking team. So mm-hmm. I mean, when you think that 11 brains have to be on the same page instantaneously in those 2 seconds when the ball turns over, and as you say, if two guys don't, you know, the whole thing breaks down. So it is a very drilled, organized thing. All right, so what are you guys been working on in training since you got back?
I think a little bit was to kind of take a few days off because we went very hard in Orlando. We worked up a full preseason like most teams, and then we had 3 games in 14 days, I think, or something like that. So they came pretty quickly. And then obviously – we want to come back and lower the load a little bit. But I think ultimately we want to self-reflect on our time in Orlando and figure out what we can do better. And I think at times our decision-making on the ball, from myself included to everybody, can be better. And I think the more comfortable we can be being uncomfortable on the pitch, the better we will be. And a lot of times teams will come and press. And whether they press well or not, the more comfortable you can be with that press, the better we're going to be. And that's something we've definitely worked on because we'd rather have the ball than not have the ball. We want to rest on the ball, not rest in a low block defensively. That's not fun. So I think that's something that we're trying to improve. And everyone from myself to the goalies to the center forwards can all improve on that. And ultimately just keep getting those connections better because, like I said, there's still a few players who only played 5 games. Tab's only been in charge for 5 games. And we're still trying to work on those concepts. And I think we took steps forward in Orlando. We didn't get a win, even though we should have. I think even if it was ugly, I think we still could have gotten one against the Galaxy, and we should have played better in the second half against LAFC. And the Timbers game got away from us a bit. But I think we're taking steps in the right direction, which gives us a lot of excitement going into phase one of MLS's back again, or whatever they might call it.
I don't know. I don't know yet. I know it's phase one, though. It's Eric Valentin joining us here. Yeah, so – you got to be pumped now. I mean, you're going to get to play some games in BBVA. I know you've been back in there for some practice games. First game's FC Dallas, it's your rival. 6 games, you're going to play them twice, Sporting twice, Colorado and Minnesota, if I'm correct here. But the games are, again, going to come very quick and heavy. So I'm assuming there will be a pretty extended roster that may be needed for this time period.
Of course. And that's what they've been focusing on recently with all this going on, is everyone needs to be ready from player 1 to 22. We need to use everybody, and they're not easy games. If you look at the teams that we are playing, Minnesota has shown how good they can be. Kansas City is a good team as well, which we know that. Colorado started off the season 2-0, and then obviously, you know, in MLS's back, it's interesting because certain teams can come and fit, and a lot of times individual moments of brilliance in those first few games really were the changing point, or just individual mistakes. Those were kind of how the games were separated. And then Dallas is a rival, and those games are always extremely difficult. So we do not have a quote-unquote easy first 6 games, but ultimately those are the fun ones. We want to play good teams. We want to continue to challenge ourselves. And we had difficult games in Orlando, which was great. And I think that we showed that we could play with any team in this league. and it's exciting to get back in there. And we're going to need everyone from the 35, 36-year-old Boney and Minor to the 16-year-old Juan that we probably just signed. And it's going to be exciting to see some of these younger guys get out there and play some competitive matches and show what they can to myself and the coaches and have a lot of fun doing so.
Two quick questions before we let you go. How about the young guys? Have they added a freshness to training? Have they stepped right in there and kind of gone with the flow of everything, or are they still feeling their way around a bit?
They're very respectful. They haven't filled up my water bottle as much as I'd like, but we'll get there though. But these are good players.
Bring me my shoes.
Excuse me?
Bring me my shoes.
Exactly. No, you have to ease them into it a bit. No, they're very respectful. They're very curious, which is great. And they're good players. They pass the eye test is what I say. When you watch them play, you can say, they got something. And they're young enough. I mean, I was talking to Juan. I turned 29 and he's 16. To think that I'm 13 years older than him is wild to me. Yeah. So for me, it's impressive to see that. And I was playing next to Ian today, and Ian was he's 18 years old, I believe, as well. Then Marcelo was on in the midfield. So he's 20, Marcelo's 19, Nico's 20 on the pitch as well. And then Juan and Rios come in, and these guys are 16, 17 years old. It's exciting to see. And they have a lot of potential. There's going to be some ups and downs. They're going to make mistakes. But I always tell the young guys that I don't care if you make mistakes. And guess what? You're going to make them, and you're going to make a lot. But just make sure you react to those mistakes in the best way possible and try to win the ball back, then you'll be great from there.
Yeah, and Zarek's talking about Ian Hoffman, who was just signed and actually was brought in with the under-17 German national team before going with the U.S. under-20 team in Germany. There's a lot of high marks in and around his play. All right, last one before I let you go. We got a great Champions League, 8 teams left.
Don't make me pick.
Yeah, Atalanta, PSG, Leipzig, Atletico, Barca, Bayern, Manchester City, and Lyon. So there's two teams there that have won it. We may have a new winner finally, and those two teams are squaring off, Barca and Bayern. Who are you picking to win the Champions League? You got to pick?
To be complete, I don't want to say Bayern because I feel like that's a cop-out. I don't want to go that normal route.
Okay.
So if we're going to go, I don't think Man City will do as well as people think. I think they will get through the round. I'd love to see someone completely different. Yeah. Love to see Red Bull or Atalanta. You know what I mean? I enjoy when not the normal teams and these underdogs. That's why the EPL has been so fun to watch, when you see Wolves doing well and Leicester's in third place. And you see all these big clubs losing and the shuffling. It's fantastic. So I hope that there's a little bit of a wrinkle thrown in there. Hopefully it's not Barcelona or Bayern Munich getting to the final again. It's exciting though. And I'm extremely, extremely excited personally because Fulham just got promoted. So that's another one. I'm excited about that. Yep, exactly. So hopefully we see a wrinkle thrown into the last four of the Champions League after this next round. I'd be excited about that.
I like your call on Atalanta because they play a great game. But the other thing I think with them is they may not have the depth of some of those more powerful teams, you know, the Barces or maybe in this case the Bayerns and the Cities. But since it's single elimination, I think that's a nice little advantage and bonus point for them. And
I must say that we play the only sport where I genuinely believe that any team on any day can beat somebody. I don't – maybe hockey might be like that, but typically in basketball, if you have a one-off and one team's really stacked and the other team isn't, they will pretty much take care of it. I'm thinking football too. But soccer or football, whatever you want to say, has shown over the years that you just need one really good game. And any team can beat anybody tactically. You can have individual moments of brilliance. And I think you see a lot more upsets in that because of the way our game is played compared to other sports. And that's the best part, though. When these single elimination games happen, anything can happen. I look back to when Salt Lake went into LAFC and beat them in the playoffs. And you're thinking, that's not going to happen. And then it was a massive upset. And it was fantastic. And I just don't think that happens in many other sports, which is what makes ours so unique and so fun to watch.
No better way to end the interview than that. That's a great sermon right there, delivered by the Reverend Zarek Valentin.
Oh, stop.
Zarek, best of luck against FC Dallas. I'm sure I'm going to talk to you before then. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Great insight from the bubble, from training, from everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That does it for Soccer Matters here in Austin, Texas. Again, as always, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 512-865-6710. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They are the presenting sponsors of this show. We don't get on the air without them. DaspitLawAustin.com. Thank you very much for your support of the great game of soccer. Also to Loustau Vermouth, one of our newest sponsors. Get the refreshing Loustau Vermouth. Ask for it at your local liquor store. Lustau. Amazing product from Spain. Follow me at Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. GlennDavisSoccer.com. And a reminder, don't forget, coming up, Leipzig and Atletico Madrid tomorrow. Friday, it's Barcelona against Bayern Munich. Saturday, it is Manchester City against Lyon. Until next Wednesday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.